Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. We have a super cool, fun guest tonight, Lisa S. Johnson. She is going to be on the show tonight talking about her book, 108 Rockstar Guitars. And while we wait for her to call in, I want to tell you that I am so impressed with my music producer, Brian Pothier, who is a guitar genius on his own right. I had a chance to go see him play Saturday night for a Jimmy Webb event here in Irvine. I've been at a couple of women's and children's charities, which are always a great thing to sponsor. And Brian gets up and plays guitar for Kelly Fitzgerald, who's up there, you know, doing vocals for her song, and it's just a magical moment. And Brian is actually, I don't want to say called out, but he's called out after the fact by Jimmy Webb, and he says, you know, for the brilliant guitar playing by Brian Pothier, you know, and it's kind of like a little magical moment. So I say that because in the past couple of days, I've been in the recording studio trying to get the last few songs vocalized, finished vocals in for the new album, which is coming out hopefully in, it looks like probably May is going to be the time frame right now. And while we're going through that, you know, Brian's creating all the music, I do the lyrics, and together we, you know, manage to make a song come out of this. But I've had a couple of songs that I've written that I'm really passionate about, that I really, really love. But when we did the scratch vocals for everything, and this is after, you know, Brian's come up with this magical musical number using, you know, a 12-string guitar. He's used a ukulele a couple of times, or, you know, just a plain old regular guitar. We're going to find out all about guitars tonight. So it's really a guitar story. Brian comes up with this beautiful music, and I've laid down these vocals for some of these songs. It sounds like Cats and Heat, just like horrible. Now, everybody says, oh, you're too hard on yourself. I will tell you, there are some songs that I've sung that are really, really good, and you're going to hear some of them on the show in the not-too-distant future, and you go like, holy cow, that's really you? And I'll say, yes, it's really me. There are some songs, though, that are on the album that when I've sung them, I've gone, boy, this is not something that I would pay money for, and this is really terrible. Well, we had a situation like that yesterday. One of the songs that I wrote at the very beginning of this whole process last summer, it's called So Long, Mr. Nice Guy. And in the song, it's not a big stretch vocally for me either. So it's not like I'm trying to sing falsetto throughout this whole thing, and it's just sounding really bad. But I sounded terrible in the scratch vocals that we did. And the process of listening to the song back, you know, I try to listen, okay, you know, how could I make this performance a little different? What should I change? What's good? What is, you know, what's something I need to really work on? I really struggled to listen to the scratch vocal performance because it was terrible. And I was like, this just pains me. It's like fingers on a chalkboard, you know, or somebody who can't play guitar well and you're listening to play guitar. It's just bad. Well, we go into the studio yesterday, and I'm sitting there with Brian saying, whatever we did before, we can't repeat. So, you know, what direction do you want to give me? And so this master guitar player, who's also a master producer, says, why don't you try to sing it full voice? Well, that's not something I do or have done on any of the other songs. There's 11 brand new songs on this album. And I said, let's do it. And so we sang it. He got it mixed last night and sent it over this morning. And before going back into the studio to work on other stuff today, sent that over, and wow, what a fantastic song. I totally now love it, and now it's like for the last three songs that we've got to do, I want to sing in full voice again. So anyway, I'm going to play a song to kick off the show. It's going to be Barracuda by Heart. While the song is playing, I'm going to get Lisa S. Johnson on the line here, and she'll join us right after this. So I say sit tight. Get out of your chairs. That's Heart and Barracuda.
Hello?
No, this may be
I think we're getting applause for our guest tonight. That's Heart with Barracuda, and what a great way to segue into tonight's VIP special guest star, which is Lisa S. Johnson. She's the author of 108 Rockstar Guitars. And Lisa, you were calling us from a balcony in Hawaii. So thank you for taking time out of a sunny vacation to be here on the show.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me on.
Wow. So I need to tell you, when I was first approached about having you on the show, number one, I said, absolutely, this is somebody I want to talk to. But then they said, we're going to send you a copy of the book. And I thought, okay, you know, it's a book. And then this huge crate arrives in the mail, and it weighs about 18 tons. And I said, did I order something in my sleep that I'm not aware of? And I pull out this gorgeous, beautiful book that is something that, I'm going to tell you, Lisa, I haven't bought a coffee table book since I bought a world geography book when I was a sophomore at Arizona State University 300 years ago. This is something that is
wow.
a showpiece, and I am so excited to have this. I've looked through the whole book, and I'm kind of scared to touch it because it's so pretty. But anyway, you did a great job.
Thank you so much for all those accolades.
Well, so tell us about you. Tell us about your love of guitars and music and photography and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, first of all, I have to say, the book weighs 9 pounds, not 18 pounds, but I like your error because the number 108 is a cosmic number, and we can get to that, but why I called the book 108 Rockstar Guitars is a story, and the number 108, of course, totals 9 in numerology, so your 18 pounds still totals a 9, so I'm happy with that.
There we go. Okay, cool. So can we talk – I want to get to all of that, but I'd love for you to tell that story, too, about why you picked 108. But back to the story.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sure. Well, how did I get started? Is that what you were asking me?
Yeah.
Well,
you had a completely different career before. Yeah.
I did, yeah. I was working for the Eastman Kodak Company, and I had, you know, of course, access to a whole arsenal of all their professional films. I worked for Kodak Professional as a technical sales rep, and my job was to call on photographers and the photo labs that supported them. So I was at one point in the territory in Memphis, Tennessee, and of course, you know, Nashville's right there as well. So I had the best of the blues and the best of country music right there in my backyard. And I ended up, I used to go to the Unity Church, and the guitar player at church asked me out. And I started dating him, and my dad, who was a musician, always told me I was never allowed to date musicians. So I called up Dad, and I'm like, Dad, I'm dating a musician. However, he is the guitar player at church, and he owns a vintage guitar store in Memphis. And Dad was like, oh, well, that's different. He's not a touring musician. And he owns a vintage guitar store. Can we back up a little bit? Let's talk about that. My dad's like, I've always wanted a Gibson mandolin. If he ever gets one in, let me know. So I told my boyfriend about it, and a couple of weeks later, he gets in this mint condition 1917 Gibson mandolin.
No.
And I said, how much is that? I want to get it for my dad. And, you know, I recently checked on it. They're like $3,500 now.
Oh, my gosh.
So I said, he said, you can't afford it, but if you can photograph some guitars for me that I have to sell that I don't want to sell, I will trade you for the mandolin. So I said, done deal. And I started photographing those guitars for him, fell in love with my imagery for the first time, got that mandolin for my dad, and I ended up moving to New York City, and I wanted to keep photographing guitars, so I thought I may as well photograph famous ones, and I went down to the Iridium Room because I found out Les Paul played every Monday night, 2 sets, and I met Les, and he let me photograph his guitar, and that's how I got started 17 years ago.
Now, as a were you always a photographer when you were working for Eastman Kodak, or did this love of photography come differently?
Yeah, well, I went to school for photography. I studied photography.
Oh, okay.
And then I ended up getting a job as a technical sales rep for Eastman Kodak. So, you know, everyone who works for Kodak is a photographer.
You got a camera,
and,
of course.
So I studied photography, and then I had to call on photographers. So it was really working for Kodak that I really honed my skills and craft as a photographer, because I went straight from college directly working for Kodak. And
wow.
So I never worked as a professional photographer in the industry. I was the person that called on photographers. So, you know, we were all Kodak sales reps and wanted to be photographers, but we have this great job with Kodak. So what's really cool about this book is that I shot the last films ever made for Eastman Kodak Professional
in
that
book.
So you see all the last films ever made, and then I transitioned into digital because the digital workflow I also had to understand. So see, part of my job, it was like, cool, I was doing this thing on the side, learning about the films that I was selling. And then I transitioned into digital technology because I had to learn digital technology. So it was an easy transition for me. People often say, you work for Kodak and you shoot digital? I'm like, yeah, but, you know, it's an excellent technology. And I love film, and I still have a freezer full of film, and I have full intentions of continuing to use it as long as I can get it processed. It's just digital workflow is beautiful, and the quality is there now, so we can do it.
Well, so when you decided to kind of dip your toe in the pond and shoot the guitars and do all this, did you have a favorite model of camera or brand of camera that you stuck with?
Nikon was my favorite guitar from guitar. Cameras and guitars go hand in hand for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nikon was always my brand of choice was for camera, and I used this amazing lens, 35 to 72-8, and it was macro lens. And I shot Nikons for many years, and then it was like 5 years ago, my Canon buddy, who I'd had for years, he's like, you got to get off Nikon, you got to move over to Canon. He talked me into it. I got the Canon. I hated it. It was just the way that the buttons and everything worked, and I couldn't use my lens. They didn't have the comparable lens, so I used the Canon. It's a great product. It's just, I just got the new Nikon 810 that just came out, and I'm back in love with my camera again because it's just, once you start with one brand, it's kind of,
it's really hard, isn't it?
You know, your fingers move on
right.
The camera. It's just different. And then when you're shooting, you're in a mode. You know, I get an hour and a half, and I can't be dealing with camera issues. You know, I need to be able to move and go and do and. And so I'm happy to be back with my Nikon rig for sure.
I love hearing that, because when I took photography 1,000 years ago in high school, I had already bought a Minolta XJ7 or mm-hmm. whatever the model was at the time, and I could take great pictures with that. But when I went into photography class, they made me shoot with a Pentax K1000, and I was like, this is throwing me into the Stone Ages, and I can't work with this. You know, it's funny. So, you get used to your – and now I shoot with a Canon because I had a friend say, this is absolutely the type of camera that you want to get. Go ahead and get this. And I didn't have anybody else really coaching me at the time, so I went mm-hmm. with it. But you do get used to, the particular brand and the feel and the look and the touch. And going to something else is like cheating mm-hmm. on a hairdresser.
Yep. I know. That's so funny. But, it's so true. That's cool. You're a photographer. Nice.
Well, no, you're a photographer. I just take pictures. There's a big difference. Now, taking a look at your book, 108 Rockstar Guitars, by the way, you can go out and check out the 108 Rockstar Guitar website. There's also a Facebook page and a Twitter link all on the show page tonight, so you can go ahead and click that and get connected. I'm also going to encourage you to go out to Amazon and buy it, unless, Lisa, you have better places for people to buy the book. Are there other places
what's the most awesome thing? Every guitar center is stocking the book. The soft cover edition of the book. So when you're shopping for a guitar, you can just go over to the book section and pick up a soft cover edition because the book is now available in two editions. There's a hard cover that came out in fall of 2013, and then Hal Leonard picked it up and they came out with the soft cover edition. So that one's half the price. It's $54 versus $108 for the hard cover, which is the collector's edition. At $108, it's a deal. It should have been twice that much. Anyway, you can buy the hard cover on my website and it's signed. Or you can go to Guitar Center, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon.com, and you can find the soft cover edition there, and you get a real deal on Amazon.
I must be looking at the wrong place then, because when I was doing some research on the book, I found the book available on Amazon. It's a deluxe edition for $403. And I went, wow,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also a deluxe edition I hadn't mentioned. Only 540 of those were made.
Oh.
And they're all signed and numbered. There's a number plate inside. And they come with a limited edition silk scarf because I figured, hey, all the rockers love their scarves. And a lot of deluxe edition books, what they do is they include a signed print. And my work, I love to see it large, like big images on the wall. And that's how they are intended to be presented. So I didn't want to put a small 8.5 by 11 print in the book. Instead,
right.
I thought rockers love a cool scarf. So there's a cool, very cool hand made silk chiffon scarf in the deluxe edition, along with the collector's box and the signed and numbered book. So, and every single artist that's in the book got the first 108 editions of the edition book. Yeah. So
how cool is that? Oh, my gosh. You know how to take care of your people. That comes from being a good sales rep, though, too.
Well, that, you know, definitely sales and marketing from my Kodak background. But also, too, though, it's real appreciation to the artists because I really appreciated them letting me have access to their guitars. And I wanted them to be really proud of the book that what came of it. And, you know, you only get a first chance to make a first impression.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted the artists, it was so important to me that they said, hey, you know, this chick really did a good job and I'm proud to be a part of the work that she did. Because, you know, it took 17 years to make it come to fruition. So some of the guys like Ace Frehley and Peter Frampton and so many of them were the original ones that let me have access to their guitars. And, you know, 17 years later, I'm like, they probably wondered what the heck ever happened to me, you know. And so I sent them all a really nice package with the print. So every image that's in the book, all the artists received a museum-quality print of their guitar that appeared in the book. And then I followed up after that with a copy of the limited edition book. So
they're breathtaking. You know, and I don't mean to gush about on and on, but this is one of the most beautiful books I have ever seen. The images in here just pop off the page. What did you do? How did you take the pictures? I mean, because you see all the little nooks and the crannies.
That's my trade secret. I can't tell you
I don't want the Colonel Sanders 13 secret recipe ingredients here, but you have just the eye for this. When did you realize you were onto something special?
You know, from the beginning, I have to say, it was that gut feeling when I took, you know, when I was shooting, right before I started photographing guitars, with the Kodak films, I was testing. I found that when I was studying in photography school and also with the Kodak, when I did my test, I would always like shoot up close. I like to get up close. I remember shooting manholes, and I had to get right up on top of those manholes. And all my subjects, I just noticed that I had developed this style of where I like to look up close and personal. I like the macro lens and to be close up and low depth of field. I thought it could lend you a softness. And so I was never that thrilled, though, with my images. I was looking at the image and looking at the film quality and what it was producing. And I wasn't ever like, oh, look at my picture. I was never thrilled to like show somebody my work or anything. And then when I had that opportunity to photograph the guitars, it was a groundbreaking moment for me. I was like, wow, I love these images. And when I was shooting, everything else around me completely disappeared. It was the first time I was just really one with my subject and just felt nirvana, truthfully. And then when I saw the pictures, I got it again. I'm like, I love these pictures. I wanted to frame them. And I started hand coloring them. I was shooting black and white and hand tinting them and making pieces on my wall. And so I knew in my gut, ooh, I've got something here that I love. And then when Kodak transferred me to New York City, I thought, I really want to photograph significant guitars. And I started looking at Time Out magazine, seeing who was in town. And there was Les Paul at the Iridium Room. And I thought, I'm going to see if I can get access to Les's guitar. Because I grew up with Les Paul and Mary Ford. My daddy used to play his music. And I knew all about Les Paul. So when I went down to the Iridium Room, I kind of felt at home there. I felt like this is my dad's vibe. And I was alone in New York City. I didn't have any family there. And I was new and didn't really know too many people. So I knew in my gut then, when Les let me photograph his guitar, I'm like, if he gets it, I'm on to something. And I'm going to do a book. I'm going to eventually do a book. I'm going to take my time because I had my job with Kodak. And then I eventually left Kodak and I became a yoga teacher. And I had two yoga studios in Las Vegas. So I was just doing it on the side while I had my yoga going. And then when I got to a point where I knew I had enough content to complete a book, that's when I sold my yoga studios and started aggressively looking for a publisher. And I got a literary agent. We got the publisher. And then I finished the book. And boom, it was 17 years later.
Overnight success, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my gosh. So when you – okay, and Les Paul does a foreword in your book as well. Can you talk about how that came about?
Yeah, so at the 12-year mark, I went to see him at the Iridium Room one night, and I took a stack of pictures, and I said, after his set, I went back to the green room, as I often would, and sit with him for a minute, and I said, hey, Les, remember when I photographed your guitar 12 years ago? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, look at all the Les Pauls I've photographed since then. Here's Zach Wilde's Les Paul. Here's Slash's Les Paul. Robbie Krieger's Les Paul. Just went through all these ones, and I said, you know, I really need someone to write the foreword for this book, and you've been with it since the beginning. You are their hero. I mean, would you consider writing something for the book? And he said, yeah, I see what you're saying. He goes, call my manager tomorrow, and we'll set something up. And I said, well, I'm going to call him tomorrow because I don't want you to forget. And he said, I don't forget. And he didn't. And it was such a blessing to have his words in my book. Yeah, what a great man, for sure. And because of his support and his foreword and just his blessings, I donate 10% of my book proceeds to the Les Paul Foundation, which provides education for music education for children, and for the hearing impaired. So it's my way of giving back to him. Yeah, it is important. It really is, especially nowadays when there's so many needs out there in the world, and there's so many charities too. There's ample entities.
There's
that
a lot of need.
Donate
yeah.
to. Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
you know,
so I'm happy to do
it. I like music charities because, you know, so many studies keep coming out and talking about the benefits of what music does to you, not just at a, oh, that was nice to hear, but at a DNA level. I mean, it affects you so deeply. And, you know, music funding is cut here. We don't have this program there. And then the fact that you're giving back 10% of 108 Rockstar guitars to Les Paul's guitar or Les Paul's charity is just fantastic. So, when you did the book, you got Les Paul's, you know, and that was great. How did you decide who you wanted to pick next? And what did you have any type of resistance from people that you would approach?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, as soon as bands would come through New York, or, you know, when I later moved to Las Vegas, my ears would perk up with bands that I grew up listening to. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to photograph his guitar. And so I'd make the request. In New York, the second guitar I photographed was Ben Harper's, because I had just moved from Memphis, and a buddy of mine said, you gotta listen to Ben Harper, Fight for Your Mind, and I got that album, and I loved it. And he plays Weissenborn guitars, very unique guitars. One of them that I photographed was made out of koa wood from Hawaii, and just such
wow.
a beautiful sounding instrument. And so I called up his record label, and we organized it that way. They said yes. And then Lou Reed lived in New York, and I had a couple of friends that were friends with Lou, so they asked him for me, and he said yes. And, you know, that's kind of how it went. I started calling management companies, and you know, sometimes they wouldn't call you back. Sometimes you get a response, sometimes you don't. I mean, I had to request ZZ Top 3 times before I got a yes. Jeff Beck, I requested probably 3 or 4 times. Rick Nielsen, several times. I've never heard back from Angus Young, Mark Knopfler, Pete Townsend. You know, people sometimes they go, how come so-and-so is not in the book? You know, you didn't get so-and-so. And it's really cool, actually, because you're like, right on, they want to see more. And,
right.
You know, on the other hand, I go, hey, you know, I've tried. It's just you can't always get access.
They wouldn't call me back.
Yeah, so it's not that I'm going to stop asking, because I really
right,
have
right.
the project has been successful, because you have to have tenacity and let people know that you're serious. And I just sent a book out to AC/DC's management. I'm asking again. I just can't
right
stop.
So who are some of the names that we might recognize in the book? Because there's a mess
oh,
of them in
sure.
here, and so many great
oh, yeah.
talents.
Well, we have Jimmy Page's double neck, which is the holy grail of double necks, if you ask me, Stairway to Heaven guitar. We've got Jeff Beck's Strat in there, the white one that you always see him playing. It's got like a 94 body and a 95 neck on it that he put together. Eric Clapton's Brownie is in there that sold for almost $500,000 at his auction in 1999 that he raised $5 million for in one day, raising
wow.
money to feed his rehab in Antigua, Crossroads. Zach Wilde's Les Pauls are in there, his Rebel guitar and the Grail. Well, he calls it the Grail now because it fell out of a road case somewhere on tour, and the guitar was missing for 3 years, and a fan found it in a pawn shop thought it was Zach, got hold of him through his website and said, "Dude, I think I just saw your guitar." And it was Zach. So they call it the Grail. He got it back. You know,
wow.
In there. I got his triple pickup, Les Paul, the black one. And then after that, I photographed it. That was a 2000 model. I was kind of disappointed at the time. I'm like, cool, I got Peter Frampton's guitar. It wasn't the old road-worn one, though, you know? And then I didn't know at the time that that guitar got lost in an air cargo crash. You all know that story now. And then he got the guitar back, right? You heard that story, right?
No.
Did you hear that story? Oh, wow. That's an incredible story. They lost the plane crash, the cargo plane crash with all Frampton's gear. And his guitar from the 80s, Baby, I Love Your Way, was lost.
Right.
And everything was. And so now, like 3 years ago, the guy who found it on the island, it was crashed in like Aruba or somewhere like that. And somebody had found that guitar and they took it in and they'd been playing it all these years and they took it in for repair. And the repair guy recognized it as Frampton's guitar, contacted Frampton's people, said, "I think I got Peter Frampton's guitar here." And they sent pictures to Peter and it was in fact his guitar and he got it.
Wow.
Back.
Holy cow.
So
that is
I'd
crazy.
Like to photograph that guitar. For my next volume, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
well, do you have plans for a second book?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I'm already about halfway through the next volume because, you know, I've been shooting for 17 years.
Yeah,
so in that time frame, I shot country, blues, jazz, and rock. So I have a book that is halfway done that has the other genres in it plus more rock. So
oh,
that's
I love
what
it.
I'm formulating right now, yeah. Because, you know, if it weren't for the blues, we might not have rock. So, you know, there's a lot of really incredible blues players that need to be recognized.
Well, I'm in line for the second book, so let's make that happen. Now, out of volume one here, do you have a particular guitar? I mean, because it's probably so hard to pick because you got a bunch, but do you have any particular guitar that just really holds a special meaning to you? And it might not have anything to do with, you know, the artist, or maybe it's the picture, or it could be the guitar. Is there anyone that just stands out to you?
Yeah, I'll go to two. I really loved Lou Reed's Boland guitar in the book. It's one of my early shots. I shot it with color infrared film. That was a rare film. I'm not even sure Kodak makes it anymore. We made it for NASA so that they could shoot vegetation from space. So that anything green would be reproduced as red in the film. And I started, when you photograph wood with it, wood reproduces as the proper color. And there are, in some cases, if it's painted, then it will reproduce in a different color. So it's very interesting to work with. And I started using it right when I photographed Lou Reed's guitar. And those images are just gorgeous. I honed in more on the details. I really was trying to show the shape of the curve of the, of, you know, personifying a woman's body. And there's one shot of Lou Reed's guitar on his side that I just love. It's one of my favorite images I've ever taken. And Lou loved it too. No joke. The week he passed away, his management contacted me and said, "Lou wants to put these on his Facebook page.
Oh my gosh.
Send us the raw files." And I said, "Sure thing." Of course, nobody knew Lou was going to pass away. Probably
right.
Lou knew. And so I sent the images. And like within the next day, they were up on his Facebook page with the
whole
story, how it was made for NASA to photograph vegetation from space. That quote was on his Facebook. And he used that image. And he died at the end of that week. And, you
that
know, I
is.
Think it was because people don't really look at Lou as a guitar player so much. They look at him as a vocalist and a real avant-garde artist. Well,
right.
His guitar playing was also very avant-garde. And I wanted to celebrate that and the artistry of Lou. And I think he really appreciated that. And I think on his way out, he wanted that little sparkle of message to get through with fans. And I'm just honored that I had that opportunity. And the other one that I really love is actually bass guitar in there, and that is of Roger Waters' bass. It's just one bass, and it's because of the experience. I was actually in London photographing Jimmy Page's double neck when I got the call saying, hey, Roger Waters said you could come over to Athens since you're in London. You're close by. You can come photograph his face. So I'm like, oh, man. So I got a plane ticket and flew to Athens. And I had booked Kodak for the Olympics. So even though I had left the company every time there was an Olympics, they would hire me on a contract basis to staff the Olympics for them. So I was in Greece for a month staffing the Olympics. So where was the concert? Of course, it was in one of the Olympic stadiums that I had been in. So I was very familiar with the building. And there was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was in July, broiling humid heat, and there was already a lineup to get in at 3 in the afternoon.
Wow!
And we cruised in with my camera gear and Roger Waters. We got right into the stadium. He was in the middle of sound check, and he had the Athens Children's Choir on stage, and they were rehearsing. And it was just beautiful. All of the film that he uses for the wall was rolling, and he was just in full command of the stage, orchestrating the entire soundtrack. And we watched that whole thing. And then at the end, his tech, who had seated us previously, came over and said, are you ready? So we went back, and he led me directly underneath the wall, where the wall was going to fall down. I'm underneath that wall. And that's where I got to photograph Roger's base. And my lighting gear didn't work with the Greek outlets that I hoped would work. It was working in London, so I didn't have any light. So they put me on I put it on a road case underneath the wall, and they have those dangling light bulbs down underneath in there under the stage world, and with one of those baskets around it. It was felt like I was in such a third world situation, and with this bare bulb, I photographed Roger Waters' ace that was still warm off a sound check. And you can see on it, it's a black base, precision base, thoroughbred, that has a black pick guard. Because, you know, he always wears black on black on black for Roger. And his guitar is the same. It's a black base with a black pick guard. However, the pick guard edging is white. You know, when they cut it, it's got that white edge. And he has his guitar tech take a Sharpie and constantly fill in that white edge, so it's black on black on black. And you can see that when in these pictures, you can see the Sharpie, like how it's kind of crude, filled in. And it's like, it's crazy. It's cool. And you would never know that. You would never know that story, that detail.
No, never in a million years.
You'd never
be
able to get up that close.
That is awesome.
You know, so that's like, I come away from these shoots and I'm just, my mind is blown myself. After the shoots, I'm just like, whoa.
So when you get approval from all of these fantastic artists to go and visit with them, are they pretty much like, and I've got this guitar, and I've got this guitar, and I've got this guitar. How do the photo shoots work with them? I mean, outside of, you know, going to like a stadium in Greece.
Right. Well, it's always kind of different. In Roger's case, he only has the one. I mean, I'm sure he had a backup, but that was his one. I always ask for the number one guitar because that's usually the one that's the most worn out guitar. Or I ask for, give me the one that's the most worn out. If I get to go to their house, like in Phil Collins' case, it was cool. Because when I got there, he brought down his number one, which is his Jackson guitar called Soul Ah. He names all his guitars. It's like Soul Ah, you know, when he plays his guitar. And this beautiful guitar. So I did that one. And then he happened to have his Splatter guitar right next to it downstairs. And he had built a bass guitar for his wife, Helen, and he'd made a Splatter. He hand paints them, and he calls them Splatter because they look like paint splatters. And he hand wrote his name in Japanese on the bottom of it. And so I photographed those. And then he said, you know, I have another acoustic guitar upstairs, you know, this old, you know, vintage Gibson. I'm like, sure, bring that down. So he brings that down, and I photograph that one. And then he's like, you know, I have another one up there you might be interested, my Jackson Dread guitar that's got 33 layers of paint on it, and it glows in the dark. And I'm like, yeah, let's see that one. So he brings that one down, and he's like wearing these chains around his pants, you know, these custom made chains that have like the Dread monster on it from the movie.
Yeah.
And so we ended up, I mean, then he had those chains, you know, so he takes the chains off and we drape them all over the guitar. Like, that's a really cool experience to go to the artist's home and be able to work directly with them. And sometimes I get like, backstage, I'm ZZ Top, I'm working with the guitar tech, and he's like, here's the rack, what do you want? And I'm like, okay. And he's like, well, this is his number one, which was Pearly Gates. And I actually turned it down because everybody's photographed Pearly Gates. It's been shown in every magazine, you know, since last fall. And so I ended up photographing his Fur guitars and Dusty's Fur bass as well, which are Gibson Explorer basses. Serial numbers 0007 is the bass. And
wow.
And Billy's guitar is 0008. So the 7th and 8th Gibson Explorers off the line. And they put Fun Fur. They put Fun Fur on them. Only ZZ Top could get away with that. So I'm like, yeah,
yeah.
I'm photographing those. And I also got his Gretsch that Bo Diddley gave him, and then he had another reverse Gretsch made out of it. So it's the exact reverse shape, and the headstock even has Gretsch written in reverse on the back. So it's like, you know, sometimes you get to a shoot. When I just did Joe Perry's guitar, and they only brought one. That's the one he wanted photographed. Keith Richards,
wow.
Ronnie Wood, they had handpicked the guitars they wanted me to photograph, and they never play them on stage. It's Keith Richards' Gibson ES-350, and Ronnie Wood picked his L5. And these are two guitars, vintage acoustic guitars that they warm up with backstage before the shows. Those are the ones that
really?
I want to photograph. So sometimes you get the rack, you get the choice of the rack, and you shoot four or five guitars, or sometimes they bring one, or sometimes you're at their house and, you know, that's organic. So it's always an adventure every time.
I don't know when you're back in the States or when you're back in Southern California, but I would love to sit down and talk with you more, Lisa, because you are fascinating, and
aww,
holy cow, I love your book.
I'd be happy to. Where are
okay,
you
well then,
anyway?
Then we're going to make this happen then. So I'm in Huntington Beach, but I'm up in L.A. all the time. So when you come back, you know, from
okay.
Hawaii, you know, then and you're back here for a spell, let me know. Do you have any other stories you want to tell us tonight? Maybe a good juicy one that you can kind of wrap up our time together tonight? I want to play some music by some of the artists that you featured in the book tonight, too. So whatever is good for you.
Okay. All right, well, I'm just going to say, you said juicy, so it's not that juicy. It's just kind of like people will, you know, Jeff Beck was a really tough one to get. I tried really hard. I had to have Jeff Beck in my book, and I wasn't getting any response out of the management. And so it turned out he was performing at the B.B. King Blues Festival in Las Vegas, along with Galactic and a bunch of other artists. I can't remember everyone right now. And anyway, I was had approval to photograph B.B. King's guitar and Galactic and a bunch of other ones. And so I was on location. So I arrived, and I always go to the production office first and let them, and I check in. And so the tour manager for Jeff Beck wasn't there yet, so I left a card for him and said, let him know I'm here and, you know, I'm shooting some other guitars. So I started going about my business, getting my gear ready, and I went and was sitting down in the bleachers in the stadium and getting my gear together, and this guy comes barreling down the aisle, and he goes, Lisa Johnson? I said, yeah. And he goes, you will not photograph Jeff Beck's guitar today. And I said, okay. Not a problem. And so then I started photographing BB's guitar and the guy from Galactic, and, you know, my gear was out, and you could see the flashes going off. And, you know, I think he kind of understood then. I think that maybe he thought I had somehow weaseled my way into the building and was trying to do it backdoor style. And I would never, ever, ever do anything like that. You know, I'm always very professional. And so anyway, years later, I put in another request and I got a yes. And I was just so grateful for that, and I don't know if it was the same manager that remembered and or how it all happened. And sometimes you just have to live through those experiences that are kind
right.
of scary, you know, and because I would never want to have him think I was disrespecting his decision or anything. But I'm just glad in the end it all worked out. So that's a real prize shot for me in the book, and I had to have Jeff back in the book for sure. I'm
I
grateful
love it.
That he is there.
What a great story. You are an amazing storyteller. Now, with your second volume, because, you know, again, the first volume one, it's beautiful. It's something that you just don't want to touch because it's so pretty, but you have to go from page to page to page because each picture is just better than the last. There's not a lot of writing here. It's a picture book. Will you be doing any type of...
I do not want there to be a lot of writing.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted
will you do maybe a separate?
Thought absorbed in the imagery.
Because that's exactly what you do. You just you sink into the pictures.
And that's what I wanted. I wanted people to feel the soul of the guitars. I wanted them to melt into those images and really be taken in by them. And I'm grateful, you know, deep gratitude to hear you say that you have that experience when you look at the book and the images. It takes a while to get through it. It is 396 pages, which totals a 9, by the way. And all the book design, if you count the guitar headstocks on the front cover, there's 27 that go around the perimeter, which totals 9. There's a lotus flower on the front that has 9 petals. So it's very cosmically put together.
I love that cosmic
experience.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to hear something funny? The song that I'm going to play as I end our segment is Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. You know, it's 3 minutes and 33 seconds long.
Ah,
so we've got our 9.
How about that? You see how
that was not planned. When
you tune into 108, that's what happens.
It just constantly comes in. I love it. Lisa S. Johnson has been our VIP special guest today. Her book, 108 Rockstar Guitars, is available everywhere, but go to her website and buy it because she'll autograph it for you, too. Lisa, do you want to give any shout-outs or props to anybody tonight before we say goodbye?
Just thank you to you for having me on your show.
Thank you.
And
oh,
to
my gosh.
All of the artists that said yes and have helped me create such a beautiful product to really celebrate and honor them and the music that has shaped and shifted our worlds and means so much to us, because I know myself and every music lover, I know we can't live without music, and it brings back the memories and just the feelings and puts us in a space of nirvana. So grateful. Shout out to all the artists in the world that are putting
there
music together. Thank you.
Lisa, thank you so much. My hat's off to you, and go buy the book. It is just, it's breathtaking. This is Little Rolling Stones. We'll be back in a couple.
Thank you.
So we have Lisa S. Johnson on tonight, the author of 108 Rockstar Guitars. What a masterpiece of a book. I can't even imagine what the hardcover book looks like, and the soft cover that I'm holding in my hands tonight is going to be part of my cherished library. I really just don't even want to set it out because it's so nice. But then you're like, well, why do you have it in the first place? So it's going to get set out, and I'm going to look at it. But, you know, there are just so many fantastic pictures in here, and I can go through. I mean, it's hard to pick because, well, you know, I've got pictures in here from Zach Wilde. I've got, you know, just a very nice, clean, simple guitar by Ian Anderson. I can go on and on and on and on. One thing we forgot to talk about, and I really wanted to talk about it, but we had so much going on, is Lisa sponsored, or the 108 Rockstar Guitars sponsored She Rocks Awards at NAMM this year, and I wanted to find out all about that. So we're going to have Lisa back to talk about how she is sponsoring events and what it does to help empower ladies around the world. I think that is awesome. We all know that empowering people is the best way to be. I want to give a big shout out to Mark DePina, who is DIP. Mark, I'm probably saying your last name wrong because I want to call you Mark DePina, but Mark DePina down in Australia, he's going to be our guest on Monday Night Show. He is a world-famous poet, and he doesn't even know it, but that's my attempt at poetry right there. But Mark will be on our show on Monday. We've also got Mary Lou Monroe-Ray. She's dialing in from Brisbane, Australia, at Angela and Ken over at Downey's Desserts in Costa Mesa. Mesa, I haven't learned to talk today. Robert in, Robert's also in Costa Mesa. We've got Rebecca up in Naples, Laura down in Orange County, Anthony in Long Beach. I've got Victor and his lovely wife out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Gail up in Idlewild, Eric in Mesa, Allison in New York. I've got Kelly in New York, Aaron in Seattle, Washington, Kara in Nashville. Maybe you know. Lisa, my aunt and uncle, Dallas and Marilyn Miller out of Overgard, Arizona, Joseph out of St. Louis, Michael up in Hollywood, Paul in upstate New York, and the list goes on and on and on. So thank you for tuning in. This was really fun. Tomorrow we're going to be doing a special two-hour commercial-free edition of the Friday Night Dance Party. It's probably going to be a day dance party tomorrow because I've got lunch with our guest tomorrow night, DJ Justin Case. He provides us back-to-back nonstop episodes of the Twix Mix, which are available on download from iTunes. So go out and check that out if you like electronic dance music, and I do. And tomorrow just happens to be the day that we're going to be having lunch, and I'm going to debate to do the show before or after our lunch. I'm not sure which, so you'll just have to tune in tomorrow and find out, because tomorrow night at 6 o'clock I'm going to go to the Boathouse here in Long Beach and see Kelly Fitzgerald and Brian Pothier play their musical set. I'm actually going to be meeting Carol Lee and some of her friends a little earlier and catch up with them. So that's what's going on here in the studio today. Again, love having you here. Follow the show on the Blog Talk thing. There's a button that you can click to follow it. You'll get a daily update telling you where to tune in, how to tune in, and all that fun stuff. You can also like the show on Rated G Radio on Facebook, and it is my pleasure and honor to have you here tonight. I love doing this show. I love the guests we have. We've got just incredible people coming up, and I can't wait to have Lisa S. Johnson back on the show when she does Volume 2 for 108 Rockstar Guitars. But go buy that tonight. Go buy it from her website. Help support the cause locally. And we will see you live tomorrow night. Probably going to go a little bit long just because I've got so many songs here that I wanted to play that were featured in, well, not the songs, but the guitars played by the artist are featured in her book, 108 Rockstar Guitars. And we're going to really get down with Kiss. We're going to lick it up right now. We're going to lick it up. So stay tuned. We're going to run past the hour mark, and we'll see you live on Friday for the dance party.
We'll be right back. forget about it.
Tell the sand.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.